Hello, my marketing and entrepreneur friends. Welcome back to another exciting episode of the Let's Talk Marketing Podcast, where I, your host, Katya Allison, get to explore the latest trends, techniques, and strategies in the world of marketing. Now, in today's episode, I have the pleasure of interviewing a leading voice in content marketing and the content director of GrowGetter, Christoph Trapp. Now, he is renowned for transforming marketing content from activity to performance. And he's also authored several books on marketing, including Is Marketing a Good Career? Now, in our chat, we talk content strategy with a focus on creating content that really clicks with the B2B audience. Now, this includes tailoring your content to the entire buying committee, not just the end user. And this helps to speak to everyone on the committee's needs. We also dive into balancing AI and creativity in content creation. Yes, we most definitely go down that rabbit hole. Now, you will gain insights on technology, storytelling, measuring the success of content, that's a key one, and so much more. And be a fly on the wall as we debate a little bit going live versus not going live with my content platform. So grab your favorite beverage, sit back, and let's dive into it. Let's talk marketing. Christoph, welcome to the Let's Talk Marketing podcast. Really happy to have you on here because we're going to get to dive into content and content strategy, which is a subject that is near and dear to my heart. So welcome.
Thanks for having me. Really appreciate chatting with you.
Of course. So let's have the audience get to know you a little bit. We start off with our standard questions. My first and favorite question is, what was your first marketing job? Whether marketing was in the title, it's like the first job that you would classify as marketing.
Well, first of all, let's be clear, right? Everything is marketing. I mean, you know, when we're trying to, go find a team to play on as a teenager, right? That's, you got to market yourself, but that's probably not what you're asking me. My first true marketing job really probably was when I worked at United Way, VP of content. What was it again? VP of communications and innovation, because in those days it wasn't everybody's job to be innovative, I guess. But that was my first one, kind of dove into content marketing head first, honestly, at that time. And yeah. I grew up as a journalist before that. And, you know, to an extent, I still do journalism today, right? Just do it for companies, absolutely, help them tell better stories. And so that's been a while now.
Fun fact, I love journalists on content teams. I think that they know how to get to the story as quickly as possible. It's not filled with a bunch of kind of what I call quote unquote fluff in that storytelling as well too. And they are great with tight deadlines. That's why journalists are some of my favorite content marketers. So it's great that that's where you came from. Now that's where you were and you know, where you started. Where are you now? What are you currently doing?
I work for GrowGetter, a growth marketing firm in the market research space. So we work with companies in that space, right? I think currently there's no startups. Maybe there is a couple. I'm not sure. But, you know, some companies have been around for 50 years that we work with. Yeah. We help them do content strategy, content marketing, all the related things. I always like to throw a parade for content, you know. So if you're going to do an article, you better do some social posts, maybe an email, or if you do a podcast, right? Same thing.
Absolutely.
Throw it a parade. And so I've been in that space for a few years. I worked at VoxPopMe, which is a SaaS company in market research, and then moved over and now basically work with similar companies that do market research in one way or another.
I love that you've positioned it as throw it a parade, throw content a parade. I think I'm going to steal that and say it from now on. Because it's totally true. There's nothing like creating this really great content piece that nobody's going to read, not even the people that are on your team. So may as well throw it a little party. Now, what is it that you love about what you currently do? But conversely, what would you pluck out if I could like wave my wand and pluck anything out of your just kind of day to day? So let's start with the good. What do you love about what you do?
Start with the good. Everybody always starts with the bad. But no, I'm going with the flow here. So I mean, what I love about it is honestly, when you do it well, like the people you meet, the connections you make, it's just fantastic, right? I mean, just think about podcasting today. I mean, when you have a branded podcast, people will come talk to you that might not take your call to have a virtual coffee, right? And so you can really, the networking is fantastic, the, you know, those kind of things. Telling those stories, finding out why people are doing something, also finding out that some companies don't have any stories at all and they just started it because it just kind of happened. And that's okay to an extent, right? But you still got to tell some kind of story and share what the product does or the service does. But I really enjoy that, learning different things, learning new things, and you know, making that work. The one thing that, like, if we can just get rid of it, like any wasted energy, I don't have enough energy to begin with. I'm like,
explain that a little bit. Any wasted energy? What do you waste your energy on?
Well, I don't. I try not to waste my energy on it, but like the politics and like workflows that are just like, oh my God, why are we doing this? Why does it have to go through here? Why are we writing in Microsoft Word? What year are we in? So do you know what I mean? Like, how do you make the workflow efficient, effective, and just kind of go from there? And I think it takes some time for some generations, including my generation, Gen X, to like make those moves and move. I mean, especially depends on what company you've been in. Yeah. I worked for a company, Katja, not too long ago, 5 years ago maybe. And they were still carrying around printout of articles with a checklist. Like, am I back in 1982? Do you know what I mean? Like, it's like,
I know what you mean in such a, like, such a deep way. It is something that, wow, like you totally hit a nerve there with like the printed materials, which I don't know how you've overcome this at all, but I think it's really hard in some organizations that even if they're printing it out, let's say they're not printing it out, thinking that they have to have printouts to have effective content go out, even from like a sales enablement perspective, like, oh, we've got to print out this brochure. Why would we print out this brochure? For the love of Pete, it's also like the business cards. I don't know how you feel about business cards, but I also feel like it's such a waste of time. Nope. Give them a QR code, give them a scan. You may as well follow them on LinkedIn. You are more likely to be memorable in that way. I think that's really staying up with the times in general. We could probably have a whole podcast on just not printing materials or walking around with printed materials. It's so wild.
There's a printer right over there, not too far from me. And the only, so it was funny because it came up on a meeting the other day and somebody says, who still has printers? And I said, I got one right there. And they're like, well, what do you use it for? And I'm like, Amazon returns. That's the only thing.
That is so true, because you do still have to print that out. And that kind of frustrates me too. I'm like, how has, in the world of so many things being evolved, how has this not evolved to that? But you know what I do, because I don't have a printer, because they always broke down anyways, is now I just, you know, this is a shameless plug for FedEx. FedEx Print and Go, I've got the email address. I just go in there, I print it out, and it's fine. If I'm on my way to a FedEx drop-off anyways, I have to get out of the house. So, God, that's so funny that you mentioned printing. It's been such a topic of conversation where I'm currently at. Now, speaking of staying up to date with, you know, all things just kind of digital, I'm kind of curious, how are you staying up to date on trends? Are there podcasts, newsletters? You're a content person, so I'm going to assume that you consume a lot of content. But how do you stay up to date on the trends?
I get all my information from your podcast. That's the only way.
Oh! If I could, that's my clip right there. Done.
This is it. This is the show. So here's kind of what I do. First of all, I have podcasts I subscribe to. I listen to them when I listen to them, when I see them, right? Sometimes, and here's the reality, everything competes with everything, right?
Yes.
So your podcast competes with the Washington Commanders podcast, competes with the New York Yankees podcast, competes with another marketing podcast, a competitor's podcast. Everything competes with everything. and I listen to as much as I can. I listen to it in the background. I listen to it when I go to the gym, you know, those kind of things. I also read different, you know, I read different books. I, you know, social media. I'm not going to say X anymore. I'm hardly on there anymore. LinkedIn, I guess, is, you know, where you see stuff coming through. I do have some email subscriptions. If you were to quiz me on who, it's really, really hard to remember, honestly. So like, make sure you keep staying in touch and, you know, you're memorable when I see your name. But those are the main things. The other thing is what I would really highly recommend is just keep trying different things. Mm-hmm. Like, just keep trying. Like, try this, try that, you know, try YouTube Shorts. I'm glad to see that you're doing a video podcast. The other day, Spotify announced that now there's a 250,000 video podcasts on Spotify. My show, The Business Storytelling Show, was one of the first ones that got invited in 2020, I guess, roughly. And then they announced 100,000 and now we're 250,000. So my point is, how did I get there? Well, I got there because I decided that I would not do just an audio podcast. And I know there's plenty of podcasters out there that swear by that model. But what I found is that I wanted to reach more people. So I spent all this time building up my Twitter community at the time, LinkedIn, whatever. So I was like, what if I live stream my podcast to those networks? So all of a sudden I had immediate distribution, live streamed the show. And then I put it onto all those other channels and I literally export the audio, right? And I learned those trends. And guess what? Today, all kinds of people are doing video podcasts. More and more, I think the live streaming, there's a lot of people that don't like it or don't do it. I don't know why. But I mean, you told me, you said, I'm not doing much editing. Okay. Then why are we not live? Katja, that's my question for you. Why?
Why are we not live? I guess we could go live because sometimes there are some edits. I did record yesterday and there were some podcasts need to be edited. We had a lot of different pauses and breaks, and it's usually like the technical things as well too. I also find just kind of the pressure of live. That's why I don't do live because I don't have a consistent time that I would do it. And for me, consistency is always really key, but like, I don't have a consistent time that I'm going to do it. I don't know, like, if people feel comfortable. There's something that's kind of, in my opinion, I think that specifically for the people that I interviewed, there's a comfort level in knowing that there is a potential, like, oh, I can edit. I feel a little bit more comfortable with that. Even though in the end of it, we don't end up editing a ton of it. So you guys get the raw dog stuff.
Exactly. And so, I mean, like, just listening to you, honestly, like, you can go live. I think it's, I was going to say it's an excuse. Maybe it's just like you haven't tried.
Oh, it's definitely an excuse.
Yeah. Stop making excuses that you don't need. I think you could totally do it. Go live. And the other thing is on that time, I hear you and I would totally agree with that statement. And I did, but I hate to say it. Nobody sits out there and goes, oh, Christoph is going live at 2 p.m. Nobody does that.
But now I feel like that's the counter argument. If there's no one that is waiting for you to go live, then why push yourself to go live? But maybe that it is part of like that, the community that you're talking about.
Okay, I'll ask you a question. But here's the thing, because the algorithms, by the way they work, right? So I go live when it works for the guest and myself. So we have a Calendly. I think you have a Calendly too.
Yeah.
Pretty sure you did, right? To sign up. And I have it open for different days and it ties to all my calendars and then it finds a spot and boom, that's where it is. And so let me ask you this. How do you know that there's millions and millions of people sitting there and saying, oh, it is 4 a.m. Katja's podcast is dropping. What's the difference?
Literally no one. It gives me the whole day. You guys have no idea when I post it. It could be 4 a.m. It could not be 4 a.m.
But what's the, like what's the difference, right? There's no difference, really.
Yeah, that's true.
I see your podcast when it pops up. Like, I don't even know when you publish it. It shows up when it shows up. And the other thing is, too, even on Apple, I think it's pretty quick for most of these regular shows.
Yeah.
But it's not always instant, right? So like you upload and then it could be depending on where you fit into the schedule or whatever. You know, it could be a while, or it could be immediate, or it could be, you know, it's not always immediate anyways. So try it, give it a try. If you really don't like it, tag me on LinkedIn and say, it sucked. And if it was awesome, oh, no, is that explicit now?
Well, you can swear up a storm. That's totally okay. Although now maybe I will trickle in a live. Maybe I'll bring you on for a live and then we can figure that out and we can pick like that topic.
Yeah, we'll do. So here's what we'll do. I'll send you my link. You can book a time on my show and we'll do a simulcast to both shows.
Let's do it.
Something like that. And yeah, that's another way to draw more eyeballs.
That's amazing. Well, who knew that I was going to get some advice just by asking, like, you know, the trends question and following up on that. Are you ready to dive into all of the aspects of content strategy and content marketing? Because I know that for you, it was really focused, when I teed this up, it was focused on just kind of B2B audiences. So I'd love to hear a little bit about your approach on developing content strategy for B2B and why and how is it even different than from B2C?
Well, the biggest difference for B2B to B2C is that there's way more buyers, right? And you don't always know everybody that there is. We just had Kerry Cunningham on the Marketing Demystified podcast with Jen Mancusi, and he's talking about the number of people involved in the process. Like, it just keeps ballooning and ballooning and ballooning. And he says, and the example he gave, which I thought was so interesting, is if you gauge your content, the person that gets the content is pretty low on the totem pole. And depending on how they handle the content, they might not pass it on correctly. So everybody has to give their information again. And most people won't. So if you got 10 people on the buying committee, the one person who's pretty low, who's just getting the link, you know, sees the content, but five people don't because they don't want to give their email. So like, you have to think about how do you reach those people? And it's not always like the squeeze you at some choke point kind of thing to give me your email. It's how do you do that? How do you stay relevant? And then how do you keep producing content to actually do that in all these different channels? I think what a lot of B2B companies do, honestly, I don't know what the percentage is, but they don't produce the right content for all the stages of the funnel, right? I mean, yes, we want people to buy, but at the end of the day, there's people, they're in the awareness stage, right? So what are you going to do for them? They don't even know about you. They don't even know that they have the problem that you're solving. So you better be talking about that. You can't just talk about what the button on your software module does. Do you know what I mean? Yeah. So you have to create all these different content assets for the different pieces of the funnel. And I think that's where B2B companies sometimes miss the boat a little bit, right? Because it has worked the dial and there's a term I can't think of it now. Dial and die, or that's not what it is. You know what I mean? People call all day long and they say, are you ready to buy? Are you ready to buy?
Oh, now I know what you're talking about. Oh, I want to say dial and die. Dial for dollars.
Yeah, that's it.
Dial for dollars. I don't know if that's what you meant, but that's what I was thinking is dial for dollars.
Yeah, it's not dial for to die, but it feels like.
I don't know why that's where I was leaning. We apparently have a dark afternoon together here, if that's where we're leaning towards. I want to double click on what you're talking about because I don't think that we talk about it enough when it comes to content strategy. We're very focused on the buyer personas, right? Like every brand that I've worked for, there's always like, oh, there's these personas. But the personas aren't always all of the people in the buying committee. So I'd love to hear your thoughts on the difference between the buyer personas that we think that we're marketing and creating all of this content to and the buying committee that we should be creating the most relevant content to.
So first of all, before anybody adds me on X or whatever it's called, that I don't like personas. I do. I love personas. But some companies, they think like that's like the end all. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah. So
they're like, would a CMO care about this? Doesn't the CMO like more formal language? Don't they want to read this content at an 18th grade reading level? No, they don't. They want to read it at a level that makes sense to them without having to think too much. So, so like people are people, like end of story. Yeah. If I'm a CMO or I'm the junior marketing specialist and we have the same problem of this task takes too long and the specialist looks at it like, oh my God, I spent all day doing this one thing.
Yes.
That's how they think about it. And the CMO thinks about it as, oh my God, I have to hire five people because it takes this one person so long. So the one person thinks personal and the CMO thinks financial, right? Because they're not the one doing the work. It's the same problem, right? Like you just have to frame it slightly different. And I would argue that you can probably put that message together in the same piece of content. Like you can totally say quicker, cheaper. Like you hit them both. I mean, that's totally oversimplified, but do you know what I mean? So like focus on, yes, know the people, know the personas, but focus on what it is that you can do and why you're doing it and how it actually helps. What is the problem you're trying to solve? And as long as you hit that home all the time, everywhere, nonstop, you know, you might have a chance to get there. And the other thing is too, even if you don't know, if a lot of people think that, I mean, you should do research, but let's say you didn't do it because you didn't have the time, right? So you'll make up for the time later. But I mean, you'll add the time at the back end when you have to redo it. But you could test it that way, right? You could literally just be like, here's the problem. We're fixing this problem, right? And if nobody bites, maybe it's not a problem. But if all of a sudden everybody goes, oh my God, yes, right? Yeah. Like you're testing in the field, but you have to focus on the problem. And then how do you solve it? And how do you help those people be successful?
I like that. And I also, while you felt like it was an oversimplified example, I think it's actually the perfect example to make what you're talking about very approachable. The idea of that you can say it in one sentence, right? Mm-hmm. For both of these audiences and just kind of the points of view. Now, content to me also has an SEO backbone if you're going to distribute it on your website. And I would even say that you kind of have to think of it from an SEO perspective because, well, maybe this is me. This is what I will say. I think of it from an SEO perspective because I'm thinking, what are the questions that people are asking? And that's probably less SEO, but more from like a search perspective. So I'd love to hear your thoughts on search and its role in how or what you develop from a content perspective.
So I don't think SEO a lot of times maybe shouldn't be like the leader necessarily, but it needs to be like the, like this play will not work without this supporting actor. Mm-hmm. And so for example, right? So if I'm, so I have all these articles on my website about Otter AI. So the one I just published today, it's like, what is Otter AI used for? Like that is an exact phrase people search for.
Yes.
And that is why I wrote about that. I'm like, so here's how you probably will see Otter AI. Somebody has their co-pilot or autopilot, whatever it's called, in Zoom. But you can also use it for this. You can also do this. And then I have an article on how to transcribe a podcast that mostly talks about Otter AI again. Completely different story though, right? But it's really the same, the same content if you think about it. So you want to think about what are people searching for and what are the different angles that you want to cover so you can be found when people search for it. There's a fine line, honestly. I mean, you still want to find the stories that you want to talk about, but then how do you align them with search intent? And a lot of times it's, it really is just like some slight changes in words. So for example, I now know the right term, even though I don't use these at all anymore, but clips from podcasts or podcast snippets, that is not what that's called, it's, or podcast quotes. It's audiograms, right?
Yeah.
I was doing an article and like Max Brandstetter says, oh, audiograms, blah, 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 blah. Here's my quote for your article. It's like, audiograms, interesting. Of course, way more people search for audiograms than whatever the garbage word was that I came up with because I didn't know the right word.
Yeah.
And so use the right word. End of story. Like that's how I think SEO needs to be used. SEO is still important. Even with AI, I was on somebody's show. Who was it? Emmanuel Rose, maybe his AI show. And I think he asked me, oh, it's like machines writing for machines. I'm like, SEO is not about machines. SEO is about people. So AI is not, first of all, don't write your content with AI. I'm so excited, Katya, to talk to you today about this massive landscape of ever-evolving bullshit stuff. Do you know what I mean? Like, it's like the today's landscape. Like, well, like, let's delve into it. Somebody sent me his book, and they wanted me to read review the book. And I said, I can review the book if you like, but here's what I'm going to say. So you tell me if you want me to review it or not. It's completely written by AI. It's garbage. Like, oh, no, it's not. I'm like, let me show you. Before AI, when was the last time you used the word delve?
Yes.
Never. And in British English, it's a little bit more common, but I've worked with people in Britain for the last few years. They've never, I mean, they said all kinds of words to me, like that I've never heard, holly bob, or, I mean, I don't know, but all, like a holly, the holiday, basically, you know, but they've never said delf ever, or like extreme bulleted lists, right? That is like when you have a bulleted list in every section of your content, totally AI. Backing into sentences, totally AI. In today's landscape, in today's fast-moving environment, in today's ever-changing business world, no one talks like that. It's AI. On words, I'm going to keep going on this rabbit hole until you stop me.
I'm here for it because I have thoughts on this AI stuff too.
Unlocking, unleashing. Where are we all dogs? Seriously, transforming. There's a couple others. Like those words, even though they are pretty strong action verbs or whatever, like AI uses them all the time. So you have to stop using them if you want to be human. And to perform in SEO, so now we're going to come back to what you actually asked about, is you have to create human content. That doesn't mean you can't use AI for certain things, but you have to have your unique story. You have to have your unique things. Make it more fun. I mean, think about this. Everybody could say, don't use common words that AI uses. But I've heard nobody else say yet, unleash? Are we all dogs? You were like, got your attention, right? Like,
I mean, I feel like that's such a common. So I hear what you're saying. I'm picking up what you're putting down for sure. I don't know that I agree with it 100%. I think that I'm probably in the 85% bank because I do. To your point, I think that there is a place for AI for it writing your content all the way through. I too can also tell if something has been like written by AI because of those things and because I'm a user of AI, right? Like you talked about Otter AI, like there are things that AI from a content marketing perspective can be super helpful for. Like I always like advise my team, like write it out and have it tell you like, give it to a chat GPT. I know also a lot of different AI tools, but give it to the, whatever, you know, AI tool that you want to be able to give it to and then have it tell you what it's about. Like, that's a really good, like, read back. What's the sentiment of it? Like, what are some edits that you would make to it? I actually advised my son to use chat GPT when he was writing his essay. I'm like, you're having me review this. Have chat GPT review this for you and give you recommendations and either adopt them or don't adopt them. But for me, like, the use of AI from a content strategy perspective or content marketing perspective is that back and forth that you don't normally get when you're sitting down writing things, right? Sometimes it's even like the word vomit that I need in order to get a content piece started. Cause then ultimately I'm like, yeah, all of that is wrong, but at least it got me started on it. So I think that's why I'm not 100% of like, don't write it with AI. I think like as a little partner, as a tool, it can really help, especially with like really small marketing departments. But you're right. Like from an SEO perspective, it is the human element. Like someone is actually typing out, or it's less of typing. They're actually speaking out. That's what I end up doing when I'm searching anything, right? So like you have to keep that in mind as well too. And you're right. I don't say die or delve, but I do use, I have used, I'm calling myself out, unleash or unlock. But those are usually for like, I don't know, those lines that you need for an advertisement really quick. And they don't necessarily really say anything, but I don't know. I end up being like, how many more times can I say that? Discover, learn more. I don't know. And I don't know if that's just me being exhausted in like a marketing slump of like, how else can I say this?
Maybe you just can't agree with anybody 100%, but I thought you do agree with me 100% because actually I didn't say you shouldn't write with it. What I said is, so what you just said, 100% agree. So what I do a lot of times, like I have written something or even if AI got me something like based on my thoughts, or like I have a metaphor, but it's not like it's missing consensus.
Love it for metaphors.
You know,
love
it's like, I need a better metaphor here. Or like, I'm going to a conference in Amsterdam. I'm like, tell me like five things people do in Amsterdam. Okay, Van Gogh, I can't even say that, museum. Go on, you know, on the canals, like tulips, right? I'm like, okay, now let's write a post about me doing this and totally cheesily tie it to this. And then it gets me closer. And then I edit it. And then I go back and I'm again. And I think that's where a lot of people get AI wrong. They just think you do it like one time. It's just you're trading tasks a little bit.
Yes.
Source content. So
I love that. And I think that you're right. I am closer to 100% agreeing with you if that's what you're saying as well, too. Because it is not. Yeah, I know. Well, I am definitely not an advocate for copying and pasting because of like those common words. And also one of the things that AI is not great at, in my opinion, is it doesn't have like a great flow to even the paragraphs that it writes. It sounds like they're all individual sentences that were clumped together. So you have to always edit something like that. Apparently we can do a whole content show about AI because I feel so strongly about it. I'm kind of curious though, in general, as we go back to just kind of talking about just the content strategy and content marketing as it pertains to B2B, who out there would you say is just kind of hitting the nail on the head and is doing it really well? Do you have examples of companies that are?
I mean, everybody I work with, obviously I can't tell you all those names. Haha, I'm very humble today. Who's doing it really well? You know, Salesforce actually is doing a very nice job doing content marketing. And I get it. They're big. They're huge. They have a built-in distribution network. But like they just have stuff on sales, right? Like how to do sales, how to do this, how to overcome objections, how to do like, and that's really like they're building on what they already have. And then they're trying to expand it. Do they, and this is funny to me actually, because when some people say, well, we don't need content marketing, we're doing well. Mm-hmm. I mean, I would argue that Salesforce is doing pretty well. They got that big tower in the middle of San Francisco that's sticking out like a sore thumb, right? No offense. But to, like, if you don't need content marketing, why would they need content marketing? And they're doing it. So, the stuff they're producing is pretty good, high quality. I know they do podcasts now and, you know, all these different things. So I think that's a good example. The word of caution for people, like, don't model yourself, like you model yourself after them, but don't measure yourself against them necessarily because you might have run writer or, you know, like no writer and you're voice dictating and somebody like puts it in a better format. But, you know, and they have a lot of, they have more resources clearly. But you can do a lot of content marketing even with fewer resources, no doubt.
I also think sometimes people get content marketing mixed up with, or maybe they have like this preconceived notion of what that is, right? Like, oh, I don't need blogs, I don't need videos, I don't need this. And I tend to lean on everything that you're producing is content in some way, shape, or form, right? There is content that you feature on your website, there's social media, that's content. Every customer quote to me, that's content. A case study, that's content. You need more content than you think that it is that you need. And that's why Salesforce has a content engine. And they, what I think that they do really well is they just, they have that. They have an engine. They have a workflow that when I create this, these are the things that happen. They throw the parade like you talked about. I do like that you said something in regards to measurement because my next question is how do you show the value from a return on investment perspective of content marketing? I always feel like this is the thing not all content marketers get right. And I don't know why, right? Like this executive leadership team is like, we don't need to spend all of the time on that. We're all about bottom of the funnel, right? Yet they need top of funnel to get to bottom of the funnel. So what are your thoughts on like showing a return on investment as it pertains to content?
Yeah, I mean, at the end of the day, you do have to bring in some revenue at some point, but how that comes in is highly debatable, quite frankly. I mean, I still have people that say, oh, I'm seeing the bump in revenue, but they didn't come through the website. Okay, how do we know they came from marketing? Well, I ran into them at this conference and they said they listened to my podcast or they saw my articles or they saw my LinkedIn post and they saw my picture and they were like, hey, you know, and like, why wouldn't that count? And the bigger you get, the harder that is to measure, quite frankly, but you can measure when you're doing different things. And then all of a sudden things are taken off, right? So all those things, they go together. You also want to look at all the different metrics along the way. And I'll give you an example. So some companies don't even look at search impressions. It's crazy that they don't. And then you have some PR teams, they literally, that's like one of their key things. And so like, look at where you're showing up in search. Is it going up? Look at the clicks, right? Look at the click-through rate. Are there things you can do for SEO, for example, on social? I know everybody always wants to click, but social does not want you to click all the different networks, right? They want you to stay there. So maybe you should adjust your strategy and not necessarily always ask for the click, but get people engaged, get people involved.
Yes. Right? I mean,
if it's just kind of like you look at all those different things and then see what's going up, what's going down, what's working, where can you improve? And I think those are the big things. The more you can automate or have like a dashboard or something like that, it is helpful. I'm not going to lie. Like some people are content creators and they're not analysts, right?
Yeah.
So I can look at some things and I can give you opinions and they are giving me the hook, I think. Is that what that was? Christoph, you're done?
No, I forgot to turn my phone on vibrate. That was my son calling and he has a Super Mario ringtone. But clearly it startled me. No one's giving you the hook. There's no music. You're not getting pulled off stage.
I cannot jump like Super Mario, so I'm done. new hip here. Yeah, so I mean, that's kind of, I think, you know, just keep that in mind. Not everybody has the same strengths. So I know when teams are smaller, you know, certainly people will do different things and more things. But like, you know, as you get bigger, figure out what tasks do you kind of split up. Like I know Andy Christina says, well, some content marketers don't even look at the numbers. And I'm like, okay, but why not?
Yeah.
Maybe because they're writing so much content because they're so busy that they actually can't. Maybe they don't have the skills. Maybe they haven't even been given access to Google Analytics. So like figure out what the root cause is and how it would help them and kind of go from there. But I think people should look at the numbers, should see what's working, what's not working, and kind of get that idea. I think that's super important.
Is your advice to then, at the very least, take a look at the impressions? Because I am obsessed with numbers because I want to see, is it working or is it not working? Because I think like anytime you're trying to create this content engine, and I've been there, I've created content that nobody's reading and it's, you know, taking up time that I could be, you know, I could use spending writing a case study versus the FAQs that I thought were going to be so relevant. Well, I just, sorry about that.
That's okay.
I thought that I muted that.
That's an iPhone 15. Anybody listening, I have an iPhone 15 and I can't figure out why I can't. So I can only go from completely ringing to nothing and there's no vibrate. And I tried all the tips and it doesn't work. So if you know the answer, christophtrapp.com, sent me a message because I would like to know. I had, my phone rings through in the middle of calls all the time. And I'm like,
that's so embarrassing, but you know, I'm gonna leave it in because that's life. That's life, folks.
We talked about it, so yeah, I mean,
exactly, and also a reason why I don't live stream it. Now it's all baked in.
I had live streams before where like the fire alarm would go off like 3 times.
Oh, nice,
not back to back, but I mean, not here, but like you know, the other person, and or actually, I think it was marketing to Mystify maybe where it happened, and they just kind of talked about it. And they're like, okay, interesting. And it happens. I mean, stuff happens. You just have to roll with it. Yeah. The worst one probably was where the other person was talking. So she was full screen and my connection completely dropped for some reason. So I was gone, completely gone. And I couldn't get back on. So she's just talking and talking and talking. And then when she's done talking, she's like, huh, maybe we're done. And so she left at some point. I don't know. I don't remember how long, but and then I said, hey, sorry, like my connection dropped. And you just kind of roll with it. Like it is what it is.
You do kind of roll with it. I like that. You're so easygoing as a guest. And I appreciate you sharing all of the information that you have. And I only have just one final question for you. And that question is, if you knew then what you know now, what is the marketing or non-marketing advice that you would give to yourself?
Ask what's then. I mean, you get it. Like, ask questions. Like, that's how you uncover stuff. I mean, I probably did that. Who knows? But you know what I mean? Like, the more you can learn, you don't know. Ask, you know? Like, I mean, I got so many questions. Why do we have to do this? Why? What's the point? What's the goal? Because I can't actually answer anything unless I know what we're trying to do.
Yeah. Right?
Like, so ask questions, find out what the intent is. Sometimes I think there has been a trend where people and leaders are more transparent and they tell you what the real reasons are. And I grew up in some cultures, some corporate cultures, not country cultures necessarily, where like people wouldn't even tell you, right? So you like, you do something, but you don't actually know why you're doing it. So I think that's more and more uncommon, perhaps, hopefully, at least it is where, you know, where I work. Like, you just explain, this is what I'm trying to go after, right? And just ask and then
I love that.
Rocket and grow.
I love that. To me, that's curiosity. Always keep that curiosity kind of cap on and open. You're going to learn more. You're going to stay up with the trends, and you're ultimately going to be a better content marketer for that. Well, thank you so much for coming onto the podcast. I'm glad that we got through. We could have made this live. We'll make it live the next time that we do connect. But thank you again so much.
You bet. Thanks for having me. Nice to see you.
Well, I hope that you enjoyed this episode. There were definitely a lot of unusual things that happened, a little bit of a debate. Great to hear that my son called me at the end there. So you got the full behind the scenes on here. Now, I took some notes in regards to the key takeaways that I wanted to be able to focus on today. So let's dive into it. The first key takeaway, and this should probably not be a surprise, but the first key takeaway is there is potential in leveraging AI with your content strategy. Now, if you've been listening or you know me at all, you know that I am a huge fan of AI. And the discussion with Christoph on AI and content creation got me all fired up, particularly when we talked about how to use AI effectively while maintaining this human touch. Ultimately, AI is such a valuable tool for content marketers, correction, for all marketers, but it shouldn't be something that is relied on to do the work of writing everything. You always need the human touch. Also, think about leveraging AI. Oh my goodness, what a mouthful. Think about leveraging AI for generating the initial idea, providing feedback, streamlining your tasks, while that final content piece is really left to be crafted by a human, by yourself. Now, that ensures that you have both creativity and authenticity. AI tools like ChatGPT, I know that's really the popular one. Anytime I talk about AI, that's the one people reference, can be incredibly useful for getting a sense of sentiment, structure, or even brainstorming ideas. But again, it's used as support, not as a replacement. I also really want to emphasize keywords that appear on AI-generated content. Christoph definitely touched on this, but words like transform, unleash, unlock, I believe that he went real deep on the delve, which is true. Although I'll be honest, those are some of the words that I used even before AI, and now I have found that I'm trying to figure out another way around it so my content doesn't look like it's AI. Even when I haven't used it, right? So in short, enhance efficiencies, see what AI can do for your strategy, and provide yourself some useful insights. It's crucial to strike when the iron's hot when it comes to AI. Okay, key takeaway number two, content marketing impacts business. Now, the proof is in the pudding of that statement. Using Salesforce as an example, when we were talking about it, Salesforce, they happen to be so heavily invested in their content strategies, their content is exceptional. Now, I know that I've leveraged more of their content than they even know to get my marketing automation flowing. So it can and it does drive business growth from acquisition to adoption to honestly creating advocates. Now, what I focused in this discussion on with him was how to have the conversation with executive leadership. Christoph's advice was not to just focus only on revenue. Now, revenue is important. So he's not saying, and I'm not saying not to talk about revenue, but he is saying, show what else your content did for you, right? Think impressions, click-through rates, engagement. That last one is one of my favorites. I love engagement. There's also something to be said on the role of content in building relationships and networking, believe it or not. Good, effective content that provides value, that's the key. It has to provide value, can help you really reach your customers, your partners, and your prospects. Now, how do you create content of value? Well, that's a whole other podcast. What I want to leave you with is content impacts business. Now, my final key takeaway is networking to stay up to date on the trends. Now, you know, I ask that question at the top of every podcast. How do you stay up to date on trends? Now, I want to highlight this in the key takeaway, which I don't normally do, right? But it's also because I get asked a lot, why do you even do the podcast? For one, I love to share knowledge and gain knowledge for one. But in addition to that, there is a lot to keep up with to remain an effective marketer who's strategic with execution. So Christoph and I definitely share that same love of podcasting to stay up to date. Now, I'm not saying go start a podcast, but I am saying it is a fantastic tool for that, as well as networking. It's all about creating connections. For us, podcasting allows us to network and truly connect with people, and that's how we stay up to date on trends, being able to have that marketing conversation and talk to someone about what they're doing, what they're testing. I think we all borrow from one another, and that's important, which is why networking is so key. His approach also was on experimenting, to not just learn from, well, I mean, obviously learn from networking and talking to other people, but you can learn a ton of what's happening with the trends if you start experimenting and learning, right? His notes on kind of continuing to keep trying what you can, subscribing to things, testing things out there in the wild. All of those things really help you stay up to date on the trends, what's working and what's not. Now, what did you take away from today's episode? I want to hear it. Post it on the Let's Talk Marketing LinkedIn page or the YouTube channel. Leave it in a review on Apple. Slide into my DMs. Let's keep this conversation going. A very special thank you to my podcast editor, Johnny Ike. Let me know if you need his information. I will send it down your way. And a special thank you to you for listening. Until next time, may the conversation flow, the laughter linger, and the outlook remain optimistic, but grounded in reality. This is Katya, signing off.